national issues, Steve says in the book's intro. Holding our country to a high standard and searching for ways to better live up to its lofty ideals is not America bashing. It's good citizenship. Amen, brother. Steve's doesn't have a political agenda. He doesn't care if you agree or disagree with him. He shares his opinions openly so you can disagree. But he does want people to check things out for themselves, to travel for the right reasons, to have fun, yes, but also to learn, and with the right attitude. Thoughtful travelers, he says, do it to have enlightening experiences, to meet inspirational people, to be stimulated, to learn, and to grow, which is why most of what he has to say also applies to travel here in the States. Rick Steves offers an entire chapter on how to travel as a political act, kind of pre-travel preparation. Essentially, connect with people, be open to new experiences, overcome fear, see the world's rich-poor gap for yourself, and take history seriously. Don't settle for life in a dumbed-down society, for a dumbed-down life. Then Steve's tours us through surprising destinations, from the European Union, a comfortable starting point for Americans, to Turkey and Morocco, the Holy Land, Iran, yes, Iran, and struggling El Salvador. Traveling thoughtfully, he says, we are inspired by the accomplishments of other people, communities, nations, and can look back at America from a distant vantage point to see ourselves as others see us, an enlightening, if not always flattering, view. But don't get him wrong. He's a proud American, successful capitalist, and thoughtful Christian. His faith, Rick Steves is a Lutheran, fuels his activism for social justice. All proceeds from the book, in fact, go to Bread for the World, a faith-based organization dedicated to ending world hunger. So, travel is indeed a political act. Choosing not to travel, turning away from understanding the vast, varied world we share with other people and cultures, is also a political act, when we really can't afford any more, rich as we are. Until next time, this is Kim Weir for Up the Road.
This is KZFR 90.1 FM, Chico listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. Tonight on Ecotopia, we'll be discussing updates around the Valley's Edge referendum with Bridget Blair and Kim Mitchell. But first, we're going to start out with a song that was done for the opposition against Valley's Edge. This is Your Town by Kim Gimbel and Teresa Chudy.
This town is your town, this town is my town. From Hobart's Norte to the Dura Midway, from Scotty's Landing to the Butte Creek Canyon, this town was made for you and me.
As I went walking that ribbon of highway, I saw above me that paradise skyway. I saw below me our beautiful valley. This town was made for you and me.
This town is your town, this town is my town. From Hobart's Norte to the Dura Midway, from Scotty's Landing to the Butte Creek Canyon, this town was made for you and me.
I roamed and rambled down by the river, sparkling sands where the current shimmers, and all around me a voice was sounding. This town was made for you and me.
This town is your town, this town is my town. From Hobart's Norte to the Dura Midway, from Scotty's Landing to the Butte Creek Canyon, this town was made for you and me. When the sun comes shining and I was strolling, and the rice fields waving and the white clouds rolling, I feel Earth's heartbeat, I feel my heart sing. This town was made for you and me. This town is your town. This town is my town. From Old Bass Norte to the Dura Midway. From Scotty's Landing to the Butte Creek Canyon. This town was made for you and me.
This is KZFR 90.1 FM Chico, and you're listening to Ecotopia. I am Jared Geiser, co-hosting the show in the studio tonight with Maggie Scarpa, subbing for Stephen and Susan Schutte. Tonight on Ecotopia, we will be discussing the Valley's Edge referendum. We'll be interviewing Bridget Blair, and Kim Michael, two lead captains in this referendum process.
And Ecotopia is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and Lily's Brazilian Bistro, offering traditional Brazilian cuisine made fresh from locally sourced organic ingredients in the heart of downtown Chico. Lily's Brazilian Bistro serves traditional Brazilian dishes as diverse, exciting, and colorful as Brazil itself. Located at 142 Broadway, open Monday through Saturday from 11 a.m. to 9 p.m. with dine-in and outdoor seating. For more information, including to-go orders and reservations at 530-399-0675 and on Facebook and Instagram. And Ecotopia is also made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and the North State Symphony performing an upbeat, lighthearted concert entitled Hayden's Drumroll, February 11th in Chico and February 12th in Reading. Showcasing the young talent in our North State, this concert features this season's young artist audition winners as well as area youth orchestras. Selections from Schubert, Telemann, and Offenbach, and more will be featured. For more information and tickets at northstatesymphony.org. The opinions expressed on Ecotopia do not necessarily express the views of KZFR, its staff, board of directors, volunteers, underwriters, and programmers.
All right, and so now let's dive into Valley's Edge. So if you've been tuning into Ecotopia for some time or following the Valley's Edge development planning process, you know what's going on. But if you're not familiar, a brief synopsis is that Valley's Edge has been approved by the Chico City Council as of January 3rd. And this development is slated to destroy almost 1,500 acres of valuable wildlife habitat east of Bruce Road, in between Stilson Canyon and Honey Run Roads. And really what we're looking at is a prime example of urban sprawl, which would degrade air quality, exacerbate traffic congestion and automobile dependence, while contributing to an irreparable loss of wildlands and habitat for sensitive species. Valley's Edge would also significantly increase the fire risk. This land was burned in the campfire, served as a fire buffer between the campfire and the city of Chico, and served to protect the community in that time. And we're also looking at an unavoidable increase in greenhouse gas emissions, significant and unavoidable, so much so it would obstruct the attainment of Chico's climate action plan goals. And so this development is so large, it had to be a specific plan area with its own goals, policy, and programs, and its own land use regulations, zoning, and lot sizes. And so, is there anything the two of you, Kim and Bridget, would like to add to the description of Valley's Edge that you think our listeners want to hear before we dive in?
Am I on?
Yeah, you're on.
Okay. Well, first of all, I just want to say thank you for having us on the show. We're really excited to be here. I think you did a pretty detailed description of the issue at hand.
All right, Bridget, anything you'd like to add?
Maybe let's just define what a referendum is.
Yeah, I'd love to hear that.
Actually, before we do that, we're going to have...
Okay. Yeah, Bridget, you want to define what a referendum is?
A referendum is just a call to action for, it's an expression of direct democracy. It's a way that we as people can use social pressure to influence our local politics when votes are out of our hand. So City Council passed the approval on Valley's Edge with very minimal public input. And what we're doing to run a referendum is we're collecting signatures to put it on the ballot so that it's a public vote. And that's simple. People power gets us what we want.
That's right. That's right.
Definitely. Now we will have a short break before we give our great interviewees their full bio. And we'll be having that break with a song, Nothing But Flowers by the Talking Heads.
All right, you are still listening to FM 90.1 KZFR Chico. And in the studio tonight, in the Ecotopia show, we have Bridget Blair and Kim Michael as our guests. Bridget Blair is originally from South Texas and was the campaign manager behind Addison Winslow's successful run for the Chico City Council in 2022. She holds a degree in environmental sociology and has experience in issue campaigns, digital organizing, and environmental education. Bridget is a storyteller and a sculptor committed to working towards political healing in the North State. Our other guest tonight is Kimberly Michael Green. Kimberly Michael Green works at the intersection of climate change and mental health, facilitating local climate cafes at the South Chico Community Assistance Center. She is a permaculturalist, an organizer, artist, and advocate. She was the volunteer coordinator for the Addison Winslow City Council campaign and is now coordinating volunteers for the referendum against Valley's Edge.
Welcome to the show, Bridget and Kim.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for having us on.
All right, so let's jump into it. So Bridget and Kim, can you please tell us your roles in the Valley's Edge referendum?
Yeah, absolutely. So I came in as a team captain right before the referendum launched. And my role is really holding the field organizing and field directing position, which essentially means I think about how we deploy our resources, both our volunteer power and our budget, to most effectively reach the broadest audience to talk about Valley's Edge and educate them on the issue.
Awesome.
And my role is I'm coordinating volunteers. So I'm always at my phone answering questions, giving people direction, working closely with Bridget on directing people where to go in the field, debriefing with them afterwards, and just being that point person that people can feel comfortable to coming and wanting to get involved with the referendum.
Great, important roles. Thanks so much for doing all this work.
So there are technically two petitions. Can either of you explain what the two petitions are generally and why there is a need for two petitions for residents of Chico to sign?
Yeah, so in the short answer, one of the petitions is challenging the amendment that was made to the general plan that allows Valley's Edge to be included in the general plan of Chico as a special planning area. So it changes the language in the general plan from "this was a special planning area" to "this is Valley's Edge." And then the other petition, excuse me, is challenging Valley's Edge specific plan. So how I've been explaining it to folks is that Valley's Edge specific plan is kind of like a mini general plan for Valley's Edge. And so in challenging that and challenging the general plan, then it enables this effort to be successful. And we need both petitions in order to be successful. So just one isn't strong enough to actually stop the project.
All right, so when did you both get involved and why? What made you want to jump into this referendum process and give volunteer your time and labor to this referendum?
Yeah, so Councilmember Addison Winslow for District 4 and I have been friends since I moved to Chico back in May of 2021. And when he decided to run for the seat in District 4, he asked me to be campaign manager. And when we were really talking about what are our key platform points, this idea of better neighborhoods, less sprawl, was at the heart of what we were talking about. And we need more housing, yes, of course, but how we plan that housing is really crucial. And Addison had a really clear vision. And my job in that role as campaign manager was to get him on council so that he was a voice of opposition against Valley's Edge. And he is remains the sole voice of opposition on Valley's Edge. And I see my work now in the referendum as an extension of that role and of that platform and of continuing to educate and enlighten voters and empower voters to make the decisions about what the community looks like for them, what our community could look like as we move forward in a time of climate crisis and an uncertain housing future.
Mm-hmm. So I got involved with the Valley's Edge referendum because I really got involved with Valley's Edge about a year ago. I was taking a course at Chico State, and it was Environmental Thought in Action. Highly recommend the course.
Jared and I have both taken it. It's a good course.
It's great.
Who's the professor, Kim?
Dr. Mark Stamets. And we chose an action item to organize around. And a year ago, we chose Valley's Edge. And so we did a lot of action around Valley's Edge. A year ago, we did everything from letters to the editor to tabling at different events, at the Earth Fair that happened downtown. Also just protesting with our Valley's Edge signs during the protests that happened. And so Valley's Edge has been, you know, the issue around Valley's Edge has been kind of close in my radar for the last year. And when the referendum, right before it launched, I got involved with it because I felt like I wanted to finish out that conversation that I started a year ago. And it felt like a right place to do that.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. And you guys have been doing really good work on this. I have to ask, how many referendums have you done in the past?
This is my first referendum. And in fact, I had to Google referendum right before we started. And it wasn't until then that I realized what a powerful social tool it could be. I've worked on other political campaigns in the past of different sizes and previews and worked on school board campaigns, of course, city council campaigns in a few different mm-hmm. locations. I worked on a gubernatorial campaign in Texas. And so I've been involved in politics and campaign staffing for a number of years, but this is the first time where I've, you know, Addison's campaign and this referendum are the first times where I've really felt that sense of community and camaraderie and healing that we also desperately want and crave and need. And seeing that really play out in practice, not just this political theory and strategy, but the sense of how we apply ourselves for the better of our whole community. And the referendum is just such a cool thing. Once I Googled it, I was fully bought into this idea of people power and how we really collectively take action.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to put it as eloquently as Bridget did, but I would like to say ditto. I feel the same way. I worked on Addison Winslow's campaign as a volunteer coordinator as well. So, yeah, I felt like that was a role that I could hold down.
Great, thanks so much.
So what will happen do you want to recap for listeners how many petitions the referendum is aiming for and what we need? And the second part, which I could definitely repeat again, what will happen if the referendum is successful in meeting those needed signatures?
Okay, let me address the first part. So what our goal is for signature gathering is 8,000 signatures for Chico City registered voters, not the county, unfortunately, even though county residents absolutely have a stake in the Valley's Edge referendum, and we hear that all the time. It's city voters only. And we're aiming for 8,000 because we know that sometimes it's hard to collect signatures, sometimes the signatures don't get counted, so we're really shooting over about by a third. And if we collect all 8,000 signatures, what happens next is a vote, a special election, most likely, although it could be the municipal elections in 2024, general elections. But most likely the special election will occur where both pieces, both petitions, both ballot measures will be on the ballot for Chico voters to vote on, the ones that Kim just finished describing. There's a few other things that may happen as well. And those are a little bit more complex. But essentially, there are a lot of groups with a stake in this. And mm-hmm. if city council decides to not let it go for a vote, what essentially they have is the power to repeal their approval of the Valley's Edge specific plan. And then the process would start all over. A new plan would be proposed and such and so forth. And so this is really a strategic move to say, hey, this is what we want or we don't want. Let us vote. Let us speak our truth.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Nice. All right. Great. Well, thanks so much, Bridget and Kim. We will be right back talking with you again to discuss this Valley's Edge referendum in more detail. But first, let's take a short break and listen to the song titled Pass It Down by Alabama.
land of plenty, but many things aren't plenty anymore. Like the water from our sink, they say it's not safe to drink. You gotta go and buy it at the store. Now we're told there's a hole in the ozone. Look what's washing on the beach. And Lord, I believe from the heavens to the seas, we're bringing Mother Nature to her knees. So let's leave some blue up above us. Let's leave some green on the ground. It's only ours to borrow. Let's save some for tomorrow. There's a change taking place way on the mountains. Acid rain is falling on the leaves. And down in Brazil, the fires are burning still. How we gonna breathe without them trees? So let's leave some blue up above us. Let's leave some green on the ground. It's only ours to borrow. Some for tomorrow, leave it and pass it on down. Well, there's a place where I live called the Canyon, where Daddy taught me to swim. And that water is so pure. And I'm gonna make sure Daddy's grandkids can swim there like him. Now we all ought to feel just a little bit guilty when we look into the eyes of our kids. Cause brothers, it's a fact, if we take and don't put back, they'll have to pay for all we did. So let's leave some blue up above us. Let's leave some green on the ground. It's only ours to borrow. Let's save some for tomorrow. Leave it and pass it on down. So let's leave some blue up above us. Let's leave some green on the ground. Well, it's only ours to borrow. Let's save some for tomorrow. Leave it and pass it on down. So let's leave some blue up above us. Let's leave some green on the ground. It's only ours to borrow. Let's save some for tomorrow. Leave it and pass it on down. So let's leave some blue up above us. Let's leave some. It's only ours to borrow. Let's save some for tomorrow. Leave it and pass it on down. Leave it and pass it on down.
All right, listening to KZFR 90.1 FM, and this is Ecotopia. We are interviewing in the studio tonight Kim Michael Green and Bridget Blair, and we're discussing the Valley's Edge referendum, which is going on, has been going on for just over 2 weeks now. And so the first question we'll ask to our interviewees, to our guests in the studio, is how has the referendum been going? How's it been progressing?
Oh, thank you for asking.
Oh, one moment. Let me get your mics on.
Oh, thanks for asking. I don't get asked that enough. But no, it's going really well. We had a really great start, an incredibly strong start. There were hundreds of volunteers that showed up within the first week to check out petitions, circulate them amongst family and friends. And as expected, after the halfway point, you know,
we saturated some of our social networks. And so now we're doing a huge push out into the public, broadening some of those networks, going door to door, going to key commercial locations, having a little bit of experimentation here and there with what's working. What we're seeing, though, is that people are still coming in a steady stream, picking up petitions, checking them out, and circulating them. It's the return rate that's a little concerning, and it's not concerning necessarily, but folks have the idea to, you know, wait until February 11th, which is the deadline to return the petition, to make sure that they can fill out the packet. And it's harder on our end to track that. So while we feel really excited with the energy coming in, there's a little bit of cautious optimism on our end with the return rate of petitions. But optimism nonetheless.
Awesome.
So what I've been telling people, I've been calling a few people to have them bring back petitions. If you're listening and you have a petition out there, one, please bring it into the back office. And two, we have volunteer opportunities, which include what Bridget was talking about, door-to-door, commercial canvassing, events, and the like. On the note of dates, you mentioned a date, February 11th. Is that the last date people have to... for the petition returning and the referendum?
Yes, so we're asking everybody to return their petitions by February 11th. No signature gathering can happen after February 11th, and our verifiers on our end, before they go to the county, will verify those signatures, and we have to return the petitions to the county by February 13th. So the sooner we can get petitions in, the sooner we can get signatures verified and know for sure how we're progressing.
So if I'm someone who has maybe 12 signatures in my petition and I'm kind of at a stalling, slow point, do you want me to bring my petition in to the BEC office right now?
At this point, I would rather have some signatures returned so we can know our for sure progress. It may seem counterintuitive. You may still want to go out and get a few more signatures. You're welcome to check out a fresh petition packet and take it back out there. Sign up for a commercial shift with us. It's a 2-hour stint, and you can pick your location. We have some key locations in mind. But if we could get a significant number of petitions returned, filled or unfilled, I think we'll know better about our progress.
All right. You heard that from Bridget. Bring in your petitions at 313 Walnut or the Butte Environmental Council office. Bring them in. If you want to keep collecting signatures, you know, you can get a new petition. So in regards to volunteers, what are the demographics of people volunteering to circulate petitions?
This is such a fun question. So we have a ton of energy on social media. Like I said, the first few days of launching the referendum, there was a ton of people coming through our doors. And what's incredible is the age gap. And I don't think that this is a unknown thing in Chico, and Chico politics especially, that there's a significant age gap between the folks who've been doing this for decades and anybody else. So what I find incredible is a lot of people think that young folks are running this referendum, and absolutely we have a stake in it and we have a role in it. But the majority of this referendum has been older women, and it's incredible the energy that they have, the foundation that they've laid for us to continue this work. We have people in their 80s going door to door, and I love that. And this is your call to action if you're a young person and you care about this issue, to show up and show out, because I think some folks are ready to retire and it's time for us to take up the mantle.
Definitely. You want to add anything, Kim, or you're good? Okay, so what is the strategy for getting the signatures? You mentioned it a little bit briefly, Bridget. If you want to elaborate, that would be great.
Yeah, so right now we're running a few different kind of signature collection programs. One is a door-to-door program. The other is a public program, you know, going to commercial spaces. Door-to-door canvassing has some incredible benefits, like getting to know your neighbors, having a personal connection to someone, hearing stories, sharing stories. And so right now we would love for more people to be out at the doors, walking in their own neighborhoods. But we find great success going to public locations, like the farmers market. We're at every Wednesday and Saturday farmers market. We have folks at the co-op usually, folks on both Chico State and Butte campuses. We are as broadly dispersed as possible with the volunteer power that we have. But our field strategy really relies on people coming in and having the energy to go out, be a little bit out of their comfort zone. I think a little bit of risk in this case is great. So if you're a little bit comfortable being a little uncomfortable, come out, join us, support the referendum movement. We need you.
Definitely. And we've all mentioned different arguments against Valley's Edge, but what are the key sticking points with people who are opposing Valley's Edge and who are signing?
What I find to be most resonant in a short amount of time, if I'm tabling at a location, that really seems to perk people's ears and make them make eye contact with me and maybe even walk over to my table, is when I tell them that less than 1% of the land designated for housing in the Valley's Edge specific plan is dedicated to affordable housing.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
0.6% of the land, 1,500 acres, is for affordable housing. This is not for people living in Chico right now. This is not for my community, renters, young people, young professionals wanting to put down roots in Chico. And that seems to really grab young people especially.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because as everyone knows, you know, we have a housing crisis. There's not enough housing. There's a lot of people being priced out of Chico. There's a lot of people without roofs over their head. So, you know, we always hear this call, we need more housing, we need more housing. And that's a major argument for Valley's Edge. And when the city council did their declaration of overriding consideration saying, yeah, we know this will destabilize our climate and ruin the prospects for future generations to have a good life, but we need the housing. And that statistic you just mentioned goes to show that, like, this really isn't going to address the housing crisis so much as it is going to produce a bunch of housing for people from out of the area.
Absolutely.
And so that's been a major concern.
Another similar line is the fact that they talk about starter homes and market rate homes on being something that, like, I could afford, but these homes will be at the low range that aren't deed restricted affordable housing that is income based for extremely low, very low, low income housing. They will be $600,000, and at the high range, $850,000. And for the median income of Chico for two, it's $68,000. I did the math. Even if you put down 20%, which no one is doing these days, there is no way that someone of a median income in Chico could afford it. But thank you so much for being able to talk about those sticking points. I feel like for people, it's definitely a range, but affordable. Kim, you wanted to add something?
Yeah, and I would say, you know, when I'm out talking to folks, if that doesn't get them just, like, the sheer size of the development in and of itself, with almost 3,000 residents, you know, I've had quite a few people say, like, oh, I don't think it's that big of a deal. What is it, like, 300 homes? I'm like, no, it's 3,000 homes. And they're like, wait, what? So that, and also just the fire issue of it being in a burn scar and the fact that it has burned three times in the last 19 years, and serves as that fire buffer, with, you know, the sensitivity that we have to fire and the vulnerability that we have to fire here. That's definitely a topic that gets people to listen.
Yeah, the project is in the wildland urban interface, and Cal Fire recently updated their fire hazard zones, and they reclassified this area as a high hazard fire severity zone, and it was a moderate fire severity hazard before. But it's consistently been a fire hazard zone, and they've known this since they began the planning, and it's just recently was classified as a higher and higher intensity fire hazard. And so, yeah, as we go into this discussion a little bit more, we're going to take a short break and listen to a lovely song by the one and only Billy Joel, titled The River of Dreams.
Oh, In the middle of the night, I go walking in my sleep, through the jungle of doubt, to the river so deep. I know I'm searching for something, something so undefined, that it can only be seen by the eyes of the blind. In the middle of the night. In the middle of the night, I go walking in my sleep, through the desert of the truth, to the river so deep. We all end in the ocean, we all start in the streams. We're all carried along by the river of dreams. In the middle of the night,
in the middle of the night, in the middle of the night.
This is Ecotopia on KZFR, and I just wanted to mention our disclaimer one more time, and that is the opinions expressed on Ecotopia do not necessarily express the views of KZFR, its staff, board of directors, volunteers, underwriters, and programmers. And we are interviewing Kim Michael Green and Bridget Blair, and we're going to jump into another round of questions with our great interviewees.
All right, so we're talking about the Valley's Edge referendum. I want to hear the bottom line. How many days are left?
We have 11 days left, so it's crunch time.
It's crunch time.
We've got about a week and a half.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Mm. Just under 2/3 of the way through.
Great. So let's see. What strategies are going forward, or are you folks prioritizing to increasing the petition circulation?
Yes. So there are paid signature gathering opportunities with us. If that interests you, please get in touch with us. We're holding interviews at the BEC office and doing a little bit of vetting process. Mm-hmm. But we are upping the ante for gathering signatures, mm-hmm. and making sure that we're staffing key locations and sending people on campus, both campuses, and yeah, doing things like this, doing things like our earned media and getting on KZFR and chatting with you guys to get the awareness out there. And again, if you have not signed the petition, you can find us at the Beck office, 313 Walnut Street, number 140, right next to Azad's. Come in any day between noon and 6 p.m. to sign the petition.
So did I just hear you say there's paid signature gathering opportunities? So people that want to really go out and collect signatures can do so and get some incentive money for that hard work?
You should not walk in to the office with a petition signed and expect to be paid. Please come in before then, and we will coordinate with you. We will come up with a game plan and make sure you feel ready and comfortable and capable, and you're using your time to the best use. And yeah.
And really, just to speak on that more, just to speak a little bit about our motivations around paying signature gatherers and the demographics that exist within that area. You know, like Bridget had said earlier on in this interview, a lot of the manpower that's out there gathering signatures right now are folks, you know, are older folks. And really, I think all across the board, all across the nation, we can see that we need younger people to get involved. And I don't think that there's a lack of, you know, concern or desire from young people, but I think that there are socioeconomic constraints.
Absolutely.
That these young people are existing within. So if you need to work a job and go to school full time just to keep food on the table, that you're not able to be volunteering your time to go out and gather signatures. So really, this was a decision that was made to have an opportunity to get more signatures, get more young folks involved, and kind of uplift some of these people just through a little bit of, you know, an economic boost. Like, I know for me, if I can make $500 or $1,000 gathering signatures, that makes a huge difference for me as a young person who is paying rent and paying, you know, high prices, and with just a bachelor's degree, or for folks who don't have a degree or whatever, it doesn't matter. But that was really the motivation behind making that decision.
Exactly. It creates an access point for folks who would otherwise face a barrier to political engagement.
And so if someone wants to do this paid signature gathering, you mentioned the Beck office. Should they just show up there, or is there a better way for them to sign up to really start this paid signature gathering?
I think a best practice may be finding us on our website at valleysedgeresistance.org, sending us a volunteer interest form with a comment that says, I want to do paid signature gathering. Otherwise, you are welcome to walk into the Beck office and speak with us, but we'd appreciate a heads up.
Awesome.
Yeah, we appreciate a heads up because you want the right people in there to give you the yes or no. So, and you can always, you know, DM us on Instagram also if you're on Instagram, and the contact form on the website as well.
And our Instagram and Facebook are at Stop Valley's Edge.
Great. So I went to a great event on Sunday that was a fundraiser for the Valley's Edge Resistance. And I know that there was a videographer, Elijah, I'm not sure their last name, but would
Eddington.
You want to, that, yes. Do you guys want to discuss a little bit of that great video series that we saw some of from the fundraiser?
Yeah, so I think it's really important when we're telling the story of Valley's Edge to talk about human stories and non-human stories. And so we're rolling out posts on social media that are joining those two stories to create a larger narrative of what this place really means for us, meaning-making of Valley's Edge. And Elijah did some great work talking to some folks on the human side of the story about what the impacts really are going to be for a Valley's Edge. And Jared was one of those people to be interviewed by Elijah. He talked about habitat loss. And later on, we were able to talk about the story of the woodpecker and the way that they work collectively in their environment, and as an example of how we may work collectively in our environment. And so Elijah was really able to capture some of those, the people who have had a stake in this work long term.
Definitely. I also saw that Susan Judy, who usually co-hosts, had a little video scene, which was great, on traffic congestion.
All right, yeah. So we had some good videos. We probably have some more videos to come.
Absolutely.
But we actually had a listener call in during one of the recent song breaks, and they wanted us to discuss the water issues with Valley's Edge. And so I'll give a little preface to this and see if our guest would like to add anything to the discussion. But But yeah, so as some of you may know, we do have some groundwater sustainability issues in our local area. Our aquifer is in overdraft. And so this project would have a serious increase on water demand as a result of the 6,000 to 7,000 residents that would come, as well as from the commercial uses that would further draw on the aquifer. But it's also not just water for the basic residential commercial uses. The Valley's Edge specific plan also includes two artificial lakes with politically incorrect names. But before I get into that, these artificial lakes are expected to be filled with groundwater. So while our aquifer is in overdraft, we have domestic wells drying up, we have our creeks going dry for longer periods of time, we see this development come forward with a proposal to increase water demand for wealthy recreation, for additional lakes that would be fed by pumping water from the deep aquifer. And their environmental review documents mention that, oh, well, some of the water will just go back down into the water, into the aquifer, so we're really not losing anything. But when their wells are pumping from the deep aquifer, the recharge that would occur from the lakes would not be doing so. And Jim Brobeck, the water policy analyst from Aqua Alliance, confirms that these are not going to be recharging the water that they're pumping out of it. In fact, these lakes will have a significant increased demand on the aquifer themselves. And so this is something that we just need to bring up when we're looking at this, is that this development really isn't looking at the most responsible utilization of our resources. They're being gluttonous. They're being gluttonous with the waste of resources. And these two lakes are just one prime example of that.
The groundwater Jared's talking about is of the Vina sub-basins. The Vina sub-basin is in overdraft, and from the Sustainable Groundwater Management Act, not formation, but adoption in 2014, the Vina sub-basin and the Vina sub-basin Groundwater Sustainability Agency has until 2042 to ensure groundwater sustainability, which includes overdraft issues, which includes issues with connection of surface water streams and lakes and things like that and groundwater. And so it's not just the fact that we have these overdraft issues, we have state mandates to ensure water sustainability by 2042, and Valley's Edge definitely could obstruct the attainment of that groundwater sustainability.
Yeah, and I think going back to the idea of storytelling in this case, I think it's important to tell the story of the salmon. When we're talking about water recharged zones and impermeable surfaces, what happens to the runoff from Valley's Edge? That runoff goes directly into Butte Creek, where one of our last remaining wild salmon runs in California exists. I read a study earlier this morning from the 2021 salmon spawning that said that it was the largest amount of salmon we had returned to the area in the last 30 years. And that was thanks to the people like at the Chico State Ecological Reserve who were doing interventions in that space to help the salmon return. And what's incredible...
And Friends of Butte Creek.
Sorry, and Friends of Butte Creek. Yes, of course, of course. But what's incredible about that is even though there was 21,000 salmon that returned to this area, because of the already existing climate change and the impact in this region, 92% of those salmon died before spawning. Only 8% made it to spawning. And that was at our largest return.
And this goes back into the climate change element, is that as the water warms, the salmon have less favorable conditions, and Valley's Edge will directly impact climate change from the unavoidable greenhouse gas emissions. And so they will also negatively impact the salmon through that front.
Yeah, polluting the creek, meaning that whatever interventions we have been doing would not allow the salmon to continue returning to this area, and we have the potential to lose one of the last remaining wild salmon runs in California.
Yeah, that reminds me of an important fact that Alan Hawthorne of the Friends of Butte Creek continually points out, is that there is a compound, a toxic compound in tires. About 1% of the weight of tires is made up of this compound. I'm not going to pronounce it right. It's called like 6-PPD quimone. You can Google that and find all kinds of studies demonstrating its toxicity to salmonids, trout, and salmon species. And so when you look at adding 23,000 car trips in the direct proximity to Butte Creek, we're looking at increased toxicity into the water from these tire emissions that are coming out too, therefore also posing additional threats to salmon.
As we only have 7 minutes left, I wanted to move on. What do you want listeners to know coming from this discussion?
A referendum is a practice in direct democracy. If you are concerned about the state of democracy in our community locally, in our community nationally, take action now. This is a practice that we all get to learn how to do together, and that we all get to join in solidarity with one another. This is an incredible opportunity to see our commonality and move away from the polarization that we've experienced in the last few years and really think about the future we want to have together.
Is there anything else you'd like to add, Kim, before we wrap this up?
Yeah, I would just also like to say this is a great opportunity to plug into your community. You know, if you're out there and feeling apathetic, feeling like helpless, or, you know, having anxieties about the states of the world, this is a great way to plug in on a local level that has some serious impacts. You know, this referendum is a 30-day sprint, and in that 30 days, we're going to get to see the impact of our success or our failure for the next 40 years or more. So this is, you know, something that somebody pointed out to me recently, that the referendum against Bidwell Ranch, that was 21 years ago, that, you know, they're still talking about it to this day. So, you know, they pointed out to me that people who haven't even been born yet or born in, you know, won't be born for the next 10 years are going to look back on this referendum as a local issue. And the history will be written depending on our outcomes. So please come sign the petition and get involved with us.
That's right. And just a reminder, there are 11 days to solidify this outcome. So if you have any free time, please reach out to saveourhometown@gmail.com, or better yet, go to the valleysedgeresistance.org website and sign in. Sign up, join, get involved, get a petition, get your friends and family to sign up for a shift at a commercial area, and give whatever you can give, because this is a community effort. And we need all hands on deck to finish strong and make sure that we hold true.
Definitely. Just to recap, they can go to all of those online spaces, as well as the Butte Environmental Council office, 313 Walnut, noon to 6 every single day. And thank you so much for listening. I am Maggie Scarpa, and I'm with Jared Geiser. And we have been hosting the show to co-host and sub for Susan and Stephen Chudy. And now we will end the show with the song titled Idiotech by, I believe, Radiohead.
And this is KZFR People Powered Radio. Thank you all for listening. And thank you to our guests, Kim, Michael, and Bridget Blair, for being in the studio tonight.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, stay tuned for North State Give and Take with Bobby Tryon up next on KZFR Chico.
North State Give and Take is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by Northern Star Mills, serving the North Valley with farm, garden, and pet supplies since 1898. Northern Star Mills offers natural and organic soil amendments and fertilizers, as well as natural holistic pet supplies. Northern Star Mills is located in downtown Chico, across from the Bidwell Mansion. And by The Printed Image, providing screen printing and embroidery in Chico since 1980. The Printed Image opened Monday through Friday, 9 to 3, and by appointment. More information by calling 530-898-9525. Today on North State Give and Take and Local Voices, I'm going to interview Bray Sisk. And this weekend, I went to an open house.